This is program C1139. We have 151 days left until our trip to Israel, and everything you need to know to make up your mind to go with us is right there on intotheword.net with a hot link for the brochure on the front page. I want you to check it out and make your mind up to come. Invite other people to come, including and especially your preacher. We've already got a bunch of preachers going. I want even more, because they will come back on fire to preach about the things that they have experienced firsthand. Let's go ahead and resume our study in the book of Revelation today. We're also using my notes, Living in the Last Days Prophecy Seminar notes. They're on the website in the PDF resources section. If you don't have internet access and would like to get a copy of the notes, give me a call, 574-850-1327. Leave your name and contact information and what you're looking for, and I will get back with you on that. I'm looking right now at page 77 in the notes, which has the paralleling of the trumpets and the bowls. I think I want to stress again, I believe very strongly that the seven trumpets of God's wrath and the seven bowls of God's wrath are the exact same events. They're just in two different visions of the book of Revelation. It's kind of like having the four Gospels. They tell the same story, but sometimes have a slightly different perspective. So these are the events that we've seen so far. The first trumpet, or the first bowl, has been poured out into planet Earth, and a third of the vegetation gets burned up. Also, those that have the mark of the beast, who have accepted it voluntarily, they start burning and hurting, I believe, at the site where the mark is, either on the right hand or on the forehead. They've got an evil and hurtful ulcer that's put upon them. As a reminder, they'd been warned, don't take the mark. Trumpet number two and bowl number two are poured into the sea. And this has to do with fire coming from a burning mountain that goes into the sea. The seawater becomes blood. All the creatures die in some number. The total is about a third of all. And so every sea creature is infected, and a third of them all are dead. And a third of the sea vessels are also affected. And I believe that probably hampers the economy of the beast leader. The third trumpet and the third bowl, they go on the freshwater, the rivers and the springs, and you've got this star falling from the sky. It's called absinthe or wormwood. It makes the waters bitter or bloody, not very easily drunk. And in the bowl event, the angel of the waters says, that's only fair, because they poured out the blood of your saints on the earth, and you're giving them water, or blood instead of water to drink. And then, of course, the people who had already died for their faith said, yes, that is fair. The fourth angel that trumpets and the fourth angel that pours out his bowl do it upon the sun, moon, and stars. And the atmosphere apparently gets affected because the sun, moon, and stars lose about a third of their intensity light-wise. But the sun's intensity for burning people is increased. So I've suggested to you that we might have some sort of event where the sun, moon, and stars have particulate matter in the atmosphere that lowers their visible light spectrum, but something also happens to the atmosphere that allows the ultraviolet, the very nasty rays that cause sunburns, to come straight down to Earth level and burn these people, specifically the people who have taken the mark of the beast voluntarily. All of these wrath events are directed toward those that took the mark, not against those of us who happen to be Christians and still here. And at that point, Revelation 8 says, a messenger, eagle of God, says, "Alas, alas, alas, for those living upon the earth due to the rest of the sounding of the trumpets of the three angels about to trumpet." In other words, you ain't seen nothing yet. The last three trumpets are really bad. Now, we already think it's pretty bad. It's going to get worse. So now I'm looking at page number 80 in my notes. And this page begins with a parallel between Revelation 9 and Revelation 16 for the fifth event. Chapter 9, verse 1 says, "The fifth angel trumpeted, and I saw a star having fallen from heaven into the earth, and the key to the well of the abyss was given to him. He opened the will of the abyss, the well of the abyss, and smoke went up out of the well like the smoke of a great furnace, and the sun and atmosphere were darkened by the smoke of the well." The parallel from chapter 16 is, "The fifth poured out his bowl upon the throne of the beast, and his kingdom became darkened." So you can see that the parallel is, both are darkened. The Revelation 9 passage gives more detail of how that darkness comes into existence. It's smoke coming up from the opened abyss. The abyss is the, well, it literally means bottomless pit. It's a reference to the place in the supernatural realm, I think, not just simply in the earthly realm, where fallen angels are kept in chains of darkness. They are kept there awaiting their final judgment. You might remember that when the legion demons said to Jesus, "Oh, don't make us go out of this place," they said, "Don't send us to the abyss. Send us instead into those pigs," because they were afraid to go to the abyss. My suggestion is that fallen angels, demons, are on parole. They are allowed at least some sort of free rein, interaction with human beings that wish to interact with them, as long as they don't violate human will. But if they violate human will, that's a violation of their parole, and the penalty could be being thrown into the abyss, where they do not have the freedom to roam anymore. And so I believe we see here one of the angels that was booted out of the supernatural realm at the beginning of the 3.5-year period. This angel is given the key to the abyss, given the opportunity to open that place of confinement up. And out of that place, first of all, comes this great big bunch of smoke, this great big bunch of darkness that goes over the kingdom of the Antichrist, or over the final beast leader. Then chapter 9 says something else happens. Verse 3 says, "Locusts came up out of the smoke into the earth. Authority was given to them like the authority of scorpions of the earth have. And they were told that they would not harm, they were not to harm the grass of the earth, nor any green plant, nor any tree, only the men not having the seal of God upon their foreheads. They were given authority, not that they might kill them, but rather that they might torture them for 5 months. Their torture was like the torture of a scorpion when it stings a man." So we have creatures come out of the abyss. They're described as locusts, but I believe they are demonic beings. I believe they are fallen angels, many of whom have been stuffed into this place since the fall of mankind. And some of them were added here because of the garbage that they tried in Genesis chapter 6. Others have been added to their number throughout time because they have misbehaved and broken their parole. But they come out angry and wishing to cause trouble. And so they're described as locusts because they are a huge mass. They act like a hive mind. They have a goal to cause trouble. Now, these locusts are told they can't touch the remaining two-thirds of vegetation on planet Earth. They're not that type of locust. Instead, they are given permission to attack those that don't have the seal of God upon their foreheads. Specifically, we're talking about those that have taken the mark of the beast, the people who heard the warning but took it anyway. So this is part of the wrath. Strangely enough, they are not allowed to kill anyone. They can only bother them. They can only sting them, cause them pain. The pain is bad because Revelation 16:10 says they were gnawing their tongues out of pain. So it is really tough. Revelation 9:6 says, in those days, the men will seek death and not find it. They will desire to die, but death will flee from them. It is a strange thing here that God imparts to these people that are being tormented some sort of conditional physical immortality. They can't die. Now, I suspect some of them are going to try to kill themselves because of the pain. They won't be able to accomplish it. Now, will they be able to maim themselves, cause themselves to have broken bones and lacerations and things like that? I don't know. All I know is during this 5-month period, these guys won't be able to die no matter how much they wish they could. We're also told that this is from chapter 16:11, they blaspheme the God of heaven because of their pain and their ulcers, and they did not repent of their actions. So the temptation, again, that we sometimes have because we're kind-hearted is we pity these guys. We can't do that. These guys were given full warning. If you take the mark, you will come under God's eternal wrath. So they were totally aware of that when they made the choice to take the mark of the beast. Everything that happens hereafter, they deserve because of their free will, blasphemy, and rebellion against God. And the fact that when it starts happening, they don't even think about repenting. They don't even act like they're sorry. They instead just pile more blasphemies against God. That shows that that's the type of people they are and have been. So free will choices here, and we should not pity the people coming under the judgment of God at this point. Revelation chapter 9, verse 7 goes into a little bit more detail about these locusts, these symbolic locusts. It says, the appearance of the locusts were like horses having been prepared for battle, meaning they have armor on. They have some sort of chain mail, probably, in appearance. On their heads were things like victory wreaths resembling gold. Now, victory wreaths were given to those that were conquering. So maybe these guys thought of themselves as conquerors and dressed themselves up accordingly. Their faces were like the faces of men, so humanoid. Their hair like the hair of women, so full and long. And their teeth like the teeth of a lion, so pointy and sharp. Their breastplates were like iron breastplates, so again, that talking about armor plating. And the sound of their wings was like many horse chariots running into battle, so very noisy whenever they fly with their wings. They had tails like scorpions, including stingers, and they had the authority in their tails to harm men 5 months. Now, that's twice now we've heard that there is a specific time period given to this wrath event. None of the others have that. Now, I will speculate with you later that this may indicate that the full wrath of God is poured out during roughly 6 calendar months. And I believe it would be during that final 6 calendar months right before Jesus comes back. So remember, the day of the Lord is 3.5 years long, so 3 years and 6 months. I think the first 3 years are all about the rise to power of the final beast government and their implementation or their preparation to implement the mark of the beast. And then I think the final 6 months is the wrath of God poured out upon that entity. All right, so these guys are going to cause trouble for 5 months, and people will wish they could die, but they couldn't. Verse 11, they had a king over them, the angel of the abyss. So the angel that was given the star, the fallen angel, that's the guy we're talking about now. His name in Hebrew was Abaddon, while in Greek he had the name Apolluon. Both of those names literally mean destroyer. And so this guy, it might be Satan. That's, I think, is a possibility, because he is definitely a destroyer and causes trouble. But I think it's also possible he might be one of Satan's right-hand guys who is specifically carrying on this campaign of destruction once God gives him permission to do so. So at this point, I need to make a comment about a prophecy preacher that I hear making comments about this particular thing that frustrate me. He actually believes that these trumpets, these wrath events have been taking place for many decades. And so he teaches that the fifth trumpet is all about the Gulf War. And the darkness here is the burning off of the oil wells, causing great big black clouds that obliterated the sun, or at least obscured the sun for a while. He suggests that what's being described here by John with the locusts is actually attack helicopters. And that the reason he does this is because in his mind, his teaching is that Saddam Hussein, his name means destroyer. Saddam means destroyer. All right, here's my critique. I was in Saudi Arabia during the Gulf War. It just so happened that I had a lot of time on my hand because I was part of a medical unit. We didn't have a lot of casualties come through our air evac unit because the Americans didn't take an awful lot of casualties. So I had a lot of time on my hands, and so I translated the book of Revelation for myself. I had all my tools right there, so I did it. Not once during my time period of doing that and being there did I think that I was experiencing the fifth trumpet. Yeah, the sky went black around our encampment because of the oil wells, and we saw plenty of helicopters, but I never once, even when I was translating this, went, oh my goodness, I think we're in the fifth trumpet, because we weren't. Keep in mind that the wrath events do not begin until the 3.5-year period begins. It's part of the final wrath of God right before Jesus comes back. The other thing is, Saddam actually means contender. It doesn't mean destroyer. It means a person who causes trouble, because he caused trouble during his mom's pregnancy with him. That's the reason. So in all respects, I think this gentleman is off base, and he needs to start over again and reconsider what he's been teaching. Okay? Revelation 9:12 says, "The first alas has gone. Behold, the second alas comes after these things." So John is told, yeah, that was pretty bad, but there's two more even worse things coming. And we will talk about those things, but not right now, because I want to introduce you to something since we've got timing that has been mentioned here with this wrath event, 5 months. I believe that we can make some speculations as to how the final 3.5 years will be formatted. Now, keep in mind, I am not a prophet, nor am I the son of a prophet. I am not saying on this, "Thus says the Lord." I am simply speculating based on my studying of past prophecies. and how that might play out with future prophecies. And so I'm looking at page 82 in my notes right now, and I've entitled this heading, The Prophetic Chronology of Jesus' First Coming. So this is where I develop past prophecies, and that should help us to understand how future prophecies might take place. It's based on the idea that the Jewish people were told that they had three mandatory attendance festivals every year. Every adult male of reasonable health living inside the boundaries of the Promised Land were supposed to go to the tabernacle or the temple later on these dates. Those dates would be Passover week, the Feast of Pentecost, and then the Feast of Tabernacles. Those were the three mandatory feasts. Those feasts seem to have symbolic qualities to them, prophetic qualities to them. And Jesus fulfilled the first two without any doubt in very significant ways, and he did so on the exact day of the calendar. This is what I mean. The 10th day of the first Jewish month was kind of the kickoff to Passover season. That was the day on which Passover lambs had to be selected, shut up, and kept by the Jewish people. The 10th day of the first month is exactly the day that Jesus entered Jerusalem as the final Passover lamb in what we usually refer to as his triumphal entry. So he fulfilled the symbolism on the exact day of the calendar. 4 days later, on the 14th day of the first month, that's the day of Passover. That's the day on which the Passover lambs had to be sacrificed. Jesus was sacrificed as the final Passover lamb during the daylight hours of the 14th day of the first Jewish month. In fact, he was crucified at the exact same moment that the first lamb of atonement was offered on at about mid-morning, and he died at the same moment that the other atonement lamb was offered mid-afternoon. So there's great symbolism of Jesus' death date. Then we know that Jesus resurrected from the dead 3 days later on the first day of the week. The Jewish people were supposed to look at the Passover Sabbath, that is the Sabbath that fell during Passover week, and count that as a special Sabbath day. The following day was the first day of the week. And on that first day, they were to offer the first fruits offering. What do they mean by that? The high priest would go out into the barley fields, because barley was the ripe grain of that time period, and he would cut the very first sheaf of grain out of the barley field. And he would take it into the temple, and he would wave it in the presence of God, and this became the first fruits offering, saying, all the rest of the harvest is to follow, and we are thankful to you for it. Well, guess what? At that exact same day, Jesus resurrected from the dead as the first fruits from the dead. Paul even uses that language when he writes to the Corinthians. He was the very first human being permanently resurrected. Now, don't get sidetracked. He is 100% God, but for our purposes here, he was 100% human. He died, and he rose in a permanent body. But he was the beginning of a great harvest of permanent bodies that will be resurrected eventually. Now, that day was also day one of a 50-day count. And the 50th day we know as Pentecost, 50 count. It always fell on the first day of the week, and that was the day on which they had another ceremony where they would declare that the wheat harvest was now going to begin. Wheat was a more valuable grain, a more desirable grain, and so the wheat harvest began on the day after the day of Pentecost. We know that the day of Pentecost was the day on which the church was birthed, and the great harvest of new covenant believers began on that day. And so in all of these respects, what we've just seen is that Jesus fulfilled the symbol of the mandatory festival on the exact day of the symbol. And so I expect that Jesus will also fulfill the symbolism of the remaining festival, what is referred to as the Feast of Tabernacles. Now, the Feast of Tabernacles has two associated days of observance connected to it. And I suspect that those 2 days will also be fulfilled in connection with Jesus' second coming. Those 2 days are the first day of the seventh month, which is the Feast of Trumpets. And we know that Jesus returns with a trumpet call. The 10th day is the Day of Atonement, on which everyone was expected to acknowledge, if you are not atoned for by the blood of the Lamb, you will bear the judgment of God in your life. And I think that will probably be Armageddon. And then the 15th day kicked off the Feast of Tabernacles, which I believe we will discover is connected with the kickoff of the millennial kingdom. Well, we'll come back and we'll touch on this and go into the next thing that I want to talk to from the notes.